This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah. This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Pauly Howard. We're live in downtown Vegas, as always, from the Circa Resort and Casino. Busy three-hour program lined up today. And, of course, we have the semifinal match going on as we speak. They have finally reached the first intermission. USA on top of Slovakia, 2-0. Jonathan Davis will join us in 15 minutes. What does he like as of right now moving forward in this game specifically? How comfortable is he right now with the U.S. holding a 2-0 lead? And we'll do some look-ahead numbers if they do hang on here and win this game today to get Canada, which we'll go over here coming up momentarily. G-Unit, Greg Peterson from here at VSiN on a very good weekend in college basketball. His best bets, Bruce Marshall, same thing. And Linda Cohen, after the USA game is over with against Slovakia, that's at 6:30 Eastern to get her reaction to this game and a look ahead to the gold medal match. Pauly, where are you at right now? You feeling pretty good with this lead?
Yeah. If they stay out of the penalty box, they're going to win, and it might be by a big margin. The last goal was a backbreaker. Thompson, the power play goal with 40 seconds left in the period, was a phenomenal shot with not much room that went over the goalie's shoulder and just under the crossbar. Larkin started the scoring early. A subdued reaction here in the book. I was surprised as they took the lead. I thought the place would erupt because there's a good crowd here. But Slovakia is 40-1 to come back and win. And right now at DraftKings, Canada's minus 125 to win the gold. I reached out to Jeff Davis, who does a great job here at Circa, he's our hockey guy, and is phenomenal with the sport, and said he felt people were too high on Canada throughout the tournament. And he has been right, as Canada's been fortunate, not only today, but the last two games to survive and reach it, the gold medal game on Sunday.
Well, let's be honest, Pauly. These games, not including the one going on so far after 20 minutes, but for the most part on the men's side, have been much closer than these betting numbers would suggest.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously that goes for the last two games for Canada. I mean, Finland had that two-goal lead today, and they eventually ended up with, 16 shots on goal? So I think that they just kind of went into the prevent defense mode, never really got too aggressive. Saros was really, really good. He had, 36 saves? But they were peppered the entire time. They were comfortable with a 2-0 lead. I felt like that was a mistake.
I didn't. You felt that way?
Oh, that's how I felt. Yeah, okay. They never. How many scores?
I didn't think there. I just thought there was a big difference in talent.
Well, that's
one of the goals was shorthanded. Mm-hmm. So I just think Canada was much the best, and it was just you need the goalie to stand on your head and on his head and get some breaks, and then McKinnon somehow snuck it through with 30 seconds left. But there could have been a little bit of that where you were laying back and playing with the lead, but it was interesting in play. They were up 2-0 midway through the game.
Yeah.
Yet they were only $1.60 to win. I mean, that's incredible. Shows you what they think of Canada.
Well, there was only one way to look at that point, right? It was to look at Canada. You had half the game left, and they were the favorites to win this whole thing, and that's the time to jump in on a favorite that was laying, several goals in the game, and you figured that they were going to make a run for it at that point. By the way, what'd you think of the penalty that they called the acting job, and Eddie O called it out kind of on the broadcast as well, look at that, kind of, flop job there by McKinnon to draw the penalty, and then they had the power play. Were you okay with the penalty?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I had a problem with what they called on USA in the first period, but again, they took two penalties, and Slovakia had two chances. But, if we get our way Sunday, and I think I agree with Davis that there's been too much of with this Canada power rating. I mean, we're talking about, again, they keep mentioning is this is as good as the 80-7 team, which had Gretzky and Lemieux. They've had to survive twice here. Calm down. But, some places had $1.50 going into the day, and it also probably going to come down to goaltending. So great to talk to Linda Cohen and Davis coming up here in a second. Jonathan, our VSiN guy, we know about Hellebuck's record in big games. And what happens on the road. But I think USA has an edge in goal with Hellebuck against Bennington, if that's going to be the matchup.
Let me throw this at you for the game. Again, currently in action, we are at the first intermission over in Italy. USA leading Slovakia 2-0. Do you think Slovakia scores? Because I have a bet right now in front of me on DraftKings that I'm going to throw at you.
Yeah, I think they score.
Okay. Because their team total right now, and you can adjust it at DK and other books as well, but their team total of a half a goal under is plus 175. So that's the same thing as betting the USA to win by a shutout right now at plus 175. To go over, it's minus 240. Now, and you can toggle with this as well, 1.5 goals. Over that is plus 190. If you think there's like no way, no how, Hellebuck and this team will give up more than one goal, you can lay the juice. It's minus 260 under 1.5. I'm not so sure they score.
Okay. Well, I think there'll be power play opportunities based on how they've called this through the whole Olympics. And then also it goes back to this is an elimination, and how long would the goalie come out if they, you know, decide to pull him, and if he stays out for a long time, because 5.5 looks pretty good over minus 150 right now with they're playing with the lead. So, you know, the first one was soft. They were a $9 favorite going into this, as high as 1,000 here. A lot of people expected a blowout. So maybe it gets ugly here, especially if they can stay out of the box. I'm curious to see what Davis thinks coming up.
So I will tell you this. Our show started yesterday right on the heels of the women winning the gold. This place was busier yesterday for that game, but that was also the gold medal match. And there was a huge eruption after they scored, and there was a big chant of USA, USA. Now, I heard Derek Stevens on primetime last night, and he was asked about out here it's going to be a 5 a.m. start on Sunday for the gold medal match, and how that's going to affect betting handling. He said, of course it will. He said, of all the hours in the day to start a game at, 5 a.m. is the worst. He said, even like 3 a.m., you still have the people who are
stay up. Yeah,
yeah, because he goes, this place is packed every weekend, Friday and Saturday at midnight. So, okay. You figure 3 a.m., people are going to stay up for sure, keep drinking, whatever, and it's going to be, you know, bedlam here for the thing.
But you're the perfect guy, Diane. How many times did you go to management and say, can we move it back when we did mornings? Can you move it back? I just, because it's so hard to get up.
There was a good conversation. Maybe we should have that on the air, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I said 4 a.m. is no man's land.
I know. We went through this for like 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Can we move?
Right.
Can we move to Hawaii? Can we get to the central time zone?
Right, right.
Can we start the show earlier? We are in no man's land.
We threw at them, can we start at 1 a.m. to go to 4, and then they'll just replay it as soon as the show is over with? Like, how much breaking news are you going to have in between that time? And we had the conversation over and over and over again, because 4 a.m. is, again, that's what I called it the entire time. What do you do? You're going to wake up and do something at 4 a.m.? Come on.
The difference. I mean, to get up at 6 in the morning is a game changer.
Oh, my God, Paul. It's just no question about that. So he also, Derek said, because of, you know, post-Super Bowl and then the NBA All-Star break, Derek said last night on primetime, I quote him, I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth, but thank God the NBA is back tonight.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to bet on. He's like, the Olympic betting handle hasn't exactly been super hot either.
Yeah.
So I also, here's a question for the audience. And it goes for both sides, right? If you're Canadian listening up in Canada, hello. Or for those of you in the States, I think this is the one time where people do not emotionally hedge their feelings with a bet. Meaning that if you're diehard, you know, if you're waving the flag here in the States, you're not betting on Canada just because if they win, then you feel better about yourself. You're doubling down and you're betting on the USA. And I think that's probably the same for Canada. Like, if you love this team, I don't think you're going to bet on the USA in case they lose, you profit from it. I think you go all in, and I think that's different, like in every other, like a normal sport, not the Olympics. How do you feel about that? Because we make emotional hedges. I have to, otherwise I can't live with myself.
Yeah, plus I imagine a Canadian thinking that USA's better or can win.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that. They won't say that publicly or even go to the book and say that because, we got to win. We're Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And we should win the game. So the minus 150 I thought was crazy going into the day, and the talk and this power rating the last couple of days has been out of whack. So now down to $1.25 at DraftKings, and I would say I wouldn't be surprised if there's overtime and that's how it's decided, and it just froze up that something happened.
No.
With the in play.
Yeah, they're back on the ice right now. Okay, U.S. with that power play. By the way, as I'm talking about that hedge bet, I think here, some books in the States, that could create some value on Canada. Because I think people are going to bet the U.S. no matter what.
Well, they haven't been impressive. I mean, his last two games have been, they're fortunate to be here.
No, sure they are. But I think everybody in the States will bet USA, wanting, they want to bet what their heart wants to happen in the match. And if the money keeps pouring in on USA, it's like, okay, now I can get Canada at a pretty nice price I never expected. Maybe that would be a time to hop in. If you're just looking to, you know, obviously not back your allegiance here and make money from it. I'm actually looking forward to the 5 a.m. start on Sunday. I know people are going to disagree with that, but I said this yesterday. I kind of like that about the Olympics, no matter where it's played.
How do you feel about Finland tomorrow?
But that's weird to me.
Yeah, they have the short turnaround. You have the third place game, and they just blew a two-goal lead when they thought they were going to advance to the gold medal round, and they're the defending champs.
That's right.
That's a tough turnaround for Finland here.
No question.
Where they think maybe Slovakia would have the edge tomorrow.
Yeah, and maybe, you know what, maybe if Slovakia gets pounded here by the U.S. in this game, I'm saying under that scenario, maybe that's where you'd want it. That would be a better loss than the way that Finland lost, I think, today. Or it's okay, guys, game was over. We never had a chance against the U.S., but now we can go win the bronze, and Finland might be, you know, dejected about it.
Saros was great, but they're going to have problems scoring anyways.
Yeah.
When you just, I mean, think about what happened in the prior matchup. They're down 2-0 with, you know, 7 minutes left and 2-1 with under a minute, whatever it was.
Yep. All right, so the second period is finally underway, USA and Slovakia. It is still 2-0 right now, USA. And now we're skating 4-on-4. Here we go. Jonathan Davis on the program coming up next from VSiN. His first period observations and what kind of a bet or bets would he suggest moving forward in this game? We'll ask him coming up next.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Is Follow the Money on VSiN.
More college basketball here. Tonight's card and a look at some of the dandies that we have on the schedule for tomorrow. We go out to the Progressive Guest Line. G Unit himself, Greg Peterson, joins the program. He is the host of the VSiN Coast to Coast Hoops podcast, available everywhere. G Unit, my man, we were just talking about Miami of Ohio. Pauly was making a case for their team total over. In this game, they're currently here at Circa Lane 8. Total is 154.5. I know you wrote this game up today at vsin.com. Your thoughts here on the numbers?
I did take a shot here on Bowling Green, mainly because I think that this is going to be a little bit of a tricky matchup for Miami of Ohio. Now, I do not think that this is going to be their first loss. I would not be looking at the money line. I set my line at 7, mainly because Bowling Green has done a great job on the road of being able to limit teams from three-point range. They allow opponents away from them to shoot only 31% from three. It's a top 45 mark in the country. They're also a top 50 team in terms of generating turnovers. And the one weakness I have found with Miami of Ohio this year, they don't grab second chances. They're outside the top 275 in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. Bowling Green has actually been very good on the defensive glass as well. And I just really like Todd Simon coach teams. It always feels like he gets the most out of his programs. This has been a Bowling Green team that has been tremendously under. By the way, so I did take a shot here on the under. Recognize that Miami of Ohio last time around, they went on the road, got the job done against Bowling Green. But I think that you get a little bit of a closer game. And I think Bowling Green is going to look up the blueprint on Miami of Ohio and try to slow this game down. So I like the under and the points with Bowling Green.
Where you have them power rated and your thoughts on would the committee leave out a team that has 30 wins if they have a conference loss or losing the conference title game?
Miami of Ohio, for me, is a top 30 team. I've been finding value on this team all season long. I'm against them here tonight against Bowling Green, but I have found myself probably in like 75% of Miami of Ohio games betting on them. It just feels like the bookmakers have not gotten the number right on these guys, and there's just something to be said about getting the job done. And that's exactly what Miami of Ohio has done, and I know you guys were talking about what happens with Miami of Ohio if they lose one or two games going to the NCAA tournament. I think that you have to take a look at the human's perspective of this as well. Could you imagine being the head of the selection committee and being like, oh yeah, we put in some team with 13 losses from a power conference and we left Miami of Ohio with one loss out. You have to rename the NCAA tournament to the Power 4, Power 5 tournament at that point. There's going to be so much outrage if you leave them out. In my opinion, you need to still reward wins. Yes, you have to take a look at strength of schedule and everything like that, but it's not entirely Miami of Ohio's fault that they don't have a strong strength of schedule because all the big boys are shaking in their boots because they don't want to play against Miami of Ohio. So Miami of Ohio's strength of schedule, not entirely on them, and I think that that needs to be recognized as well.
Okay, I agree that it's hard for them to get those games as well, no doubt. A team that's on a roll, I was going to sing their praises this week, and then they lost to Rhode Island, but St. Louis has a hell of a team, probably on the 8-9 line. VCU, a good program as well. Can St. Louis rebound tonight at home against VCU?
By the way, I remember you guys were talking about this. What happens if Miami of Ohio is 11 seed? What happens if St. Louis wins out and they pair up St. Louis versus Miami of Ohio in the first round? Now, that would be insane to say the least, but I love the St. Louis team. I'm willing to lay the number right now, seeing that at 7.5. I felt like this should be a double-figure line because when a lot of people think of St. Louis, they think of Robbie Avila and Josh Hertz. Rightfully so. We remember what they did over at Indiana State 2 seasons ago. This is a very complete team, though. Like, Robbie Avila is your top scorer. He only gives you, like, 12.5 points per game, though, because you've got 8 different guys that give you over 7.5 points per game. I go back a few weeks ago. They were up against it against Davidson. Their number, like, 7 or 8 scorer, Brady Dunlap, comes off the bench and buries, like, 6 threes. Like, this is a team that gets it from all different guys. They don't have a single guy that gives you over 6 rebounds per game, yet they're a top 25 team in terms of rebound percentage. They do a great job in terms of guarding the three as well. Like, you think of St. Louis being this great 3-point shooting team. They're 2nd in the country. They're also 5th at guarding the three as well. Like, this is one of the most complete teams in the country. If it wasn't for a fluky loss, I believe, against Stanford, we'd be looking at them only being a one-loss team as well. Willing to back St. Louis here, made them a 10-point favorite.
Good call by you, by the way. If they put Miami against St. Louis, that would be worse. They really would be.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so I tell you this. Another marquee game tonight. I don't trust Purdue as far as you can throw them. They're laying 11 and 11.5 against Indiana tonight. Total is 149.5. What do you make of this game?
I feel like this number has gone a little bit too far, especially with the fact that this is an intrastate rivalry. Indiana and Purdue, we all know that there's not going to be a ton of travel for Indiana to have to go up with, and this is one of their biggest games of the entire season. You've got a Purdue team that has been doing a nice job down low, and that's a kryptonite for Indiana. They don't grab a lot of second and third chances, but this is also an Indiana team that has been really good with their interior offense. They're a top 30 team with their 2-point shooting percentage, and that's where you can hurt Purdue. Even though Purdue is a nice rebounding team with Oscar Clough, Trey Kaufman-Wren, combining for about 16 or so rebounds per game, this is also an Indiana team that should be able to find some holes down low because Purdue's outside the top 150 in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage. With Purdue, they could be a little bit shaky with that backcourt as well. Indiana's not going to put you under duress, generate a lot of turnovers, but I like what you're able to get out of the versatility of Tucker DeVries. Lamar Wilkerson has become one of the more underrated shooters in the country. I think that Indiana's going to be able to hold in there, and I think that this becomes a slog of a game. Purdue, outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. Indiana's been slowing down as the season has went along as well. Was seeing that total in the high 140s overnight. I took an under, and I'm in on the points with Indiana, seeing that at 11.5.
All right, Greg Peterson, our guest, host of the VCN Coast to Coast Hoops podcast. He's on the Progressive Guest Line. You have a best bet overall tonight before we get into tomorrow's card.
I think that we've got a very interesting slate of Metro Atlantic action, and I'm going to take a low total under here. You've got Merrimack versus Siena. These two teams are really looking to play slugs right now. These two teams are outside the top 355 in terms of total possessions per game. You've got a Siena group that has traveled really well. Top 25 team in the country in terms of turnovers generated on a per possession basis away from them. Merrimack, they're always a team that generates turnovers. Top 35 team with that regard as well. So not only do you have a slow game, you've got a game that is going to feature a lot of dead possessions as well. Now, both teams shoot it quite well at the free throw line. That's going to help you out a little bit if you do have a bit of a tighter game. But with seeing that total overnight, 131.5, 132.5, I felt like that total should have been more in the 120s. Right now, it's up to about a 134. I like that under in Siena versus Merrimack.
Very good. Okay, let's move into tomorrow's schedule, which is awesome. The marquee game certainly is Michigan playing Duke. That's in Washington, D.C. Odd to have a non-conference neutral court game this late in the season, but here we are. The number one team in the country is Michigan. They're laying 2.5. Total is 148.5. What do you make of it?
I set my number at a 2.5 as well, so I'm going to be waiting to see if we get a little bit of line movement. I have yet to bet the side personally because this is right now right on my number. That said, I do like the over here. Semi-total at a 150.5 because if it is as close as we are thinking this game is going to be with a 2.5 point spread, you have to think that there's going to be a little bit of late game fouling, and this is a Michigan team that is playing super up-tempo. They're a top 30 team in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and it's not like it's a Michigan team that's going out there launching a bunch of threes. They're built around their low post play. You've got Ade Mara, Yaxel Lundeborg and company, and that's the same thing for Duke. Duke is typically a team that has really explosive guards, what have you, but they've been looking a little bit more down low with Cameron Boozer really being the primary facilitator for this team. So I do think that with you having just really consistent low post play on both sides, both of these teams are going to be able to find some buckets on the inside. I think that Michigan is going to be looking to play at a very fast pace. So I do like the over. And by the way, I will say, you just mentioned it, very odd to have a non-conference game this late in the year. How good are the schedule makers to think, oh, this is going to be a top five game right here?
Yeah.
Because typically we would not get this sort of a matchup. So for me personally, this is a real treat.
Yeah, another no one. Doubt. Okay, sorry. How about another one? Houston 5.5 at home to Arizona.
I'm going to be willing to take the points with Arizona. I set this line at 2.5. I recognize that things have been less than tremendous for Arizona over the last week or so. They failed to cover that game against BYU. They take the pair of losses. But you've also got a Houston team coming off of a massive heartbreak on Monday. It looked like they had that game in the bag against Iowa State. And if you, like me, had 2.5 points with Houston, you're wishing that they would have grabbed that rebound on this free throw because that costed you a cover. So that was pretty disgusting, to say the least. But for Arizona, they're able to do a nice job down low. And I think that that's actually something that's a misnomer with Houston. Houston, always a good team with regards to their post play, but this year they've been outside the top 125 in terms of defensive rebound percentage. They're allowing teams to grab over 27.5% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. Meanwhile, you've got Toby Awaka, Matias Krivas, who are able to give you a combined 17 to 18 rebounds per game. Arizona is not a team that looks to shoot a lot of threes, but when they do need to pop them, they're pretty solid with Jaden Bradley and company. I think that Arizona is going to be able to hold in there. So I'm willing to take the points with Arizona. And I saw that total come out like a high 130s overnight. This is starting to creep up as we're doing this, like a 140, 141. But so long as we can keep this below 142, I also like that over.
Very good. In like 30 seconds here, is there something amiss with UConn?
I think the biggest thing is they don't do one thing great, and they don't have that go-to low post player like a Donovan Klingon back in the day. Everything about this team is solid, but there's nothing truly amazing about them, and I think that they need solo ball to get back to how he was shooting from three-point range last season. Last season shot 40% from three, closer to 30%. If he can find it, UConn could become a title contender, in my opinion. If he doesn't, I think that this is going to be a good but not great team.
Great stuff. You can follow Greg on X. He's at GUnit_81. Yeah. And the Coast to Coast VSIN podcast as well, talking college basketball every single day. Greg, awesome. Thank you. Best of luck this weekend.
Always appreciate it, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, we will try to make sense of the NBA betting card that we have. Day two now, Tankathon, after the post All-Star break is here. And we'll update the USA game and what the number looks like against Canada on Sunday next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Welcome in, live in downtown Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino as always. Mitch Moss, Paulie Howard here on a Friday. Paul, you want to talk about closing a show and closing a week as strong as possible? This is how you do it right here. Great job by Luke and everybody involved as the great Linda Cohn is kind enough to join us for a couple of minutes here on the Progressive Guest Line to talk Olympic hockey. Linda, can't tell you how cool this is to jump on the program today. Thanks for the time. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Always great being on with you too. Really enjoy it.
So the thing with, let's start with the early game today. And Canada again down 2-0 to Finland. They come roaring back to win that thing 3-2. That's on, 2 days after going to overtime, and they were almost dead and buried against the Czech Republic. the betting numbers for Canada would tell you that they're by far and away better than these teams that they're playing. Mm-hmm. The results on the rink tells us a different story. So which one do you think it is? Do you think the opponents are actually better than we think? Or is Canada maybe not as good?
I think, you know, the prelims, you can't really go by that. Canada dominated the prelims. You know, teams that they played were really not up to par compared to the teams in a, you know, knockout round, right? Everything changes in a knockout round. You lose, you're out. And so that's what we saw from both the Americans and, of course, Team Canada in their respective games and in the quarterfinals, because both these teams had serious scares. They would have each gone home early and disappointed all their fans from their respective countries. And they both escaped in that quarterfinal round. I was a bit surprised with Canada today, this morning, against Finland. I knew Finland was good. Most of the team, if not all, is NHL players on Finland, by the way. But I still felt that, like, Canada, even without their captain, Sidney Crosby, they would have come out flying, like thanking their lucky stars they were still in this tournament after almost being upset in the quarters. But they came out flat in the first period, and then they turned it on the second. Of course, their power play is lethal, and in the end, that's what won it for them. And they've really been the comeback, not kids, but their stars have shined. It's the Mac attack. Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, and of course the 19-year-old Macklin Celebrini, who, guys, oh, by the way, I mean, you can make a case he's been the best player next to Connor McDavid in this tournament. I just can't get over the composure. He's 19 and he's playing with grown men and he's so cool and calm and creating.
USA had an easy time of it today, but they did give Slovakia a lot of opportunities with some penalties. I'm with you that this Canada power play scares me, but how important is it that USA stays out of the box Sunday?
Absolutely. I did like, Canada's game, remember, for them, you know, they got the Tom Wilsons and all this. They have the edge to them. They have Brad Marchand. They have guys that'll get under your skin, but so do the Americans, and Matthew Tkachuk and Brady Tkachuk. And both those guys do have to be careful. It's a very good point you make, especially against Canada's lethal power play. But I love the game. I know it was just Slovakia, but the Americans came out flying in this game. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to leave anything to chance. You know, coming in, the Slovakian goalie was actually stood on his head in these, you know, they were the Cinderella story led by their goaltender. But, you know, with Dylan Larkin striking first, that set the tone. And ever since the move was made to move up Jack in the game against Sweden in the quarterfinals, Mike Sullivan moved up Jack Hughes to the line of Dylan Larkin and Tage Thompson. And they have been dominating. I was scoring, putting the puck in the net. I was concerned about Team USA's depth going into this tournament if you compared it to Team Canada.
Okay.
But actually, how it's played out heading into this gold medal game, it's Team USA that has showed off scoring depth, getting goals from all sorts of players, while Canada is really dependent on that number one line of, you know, of McDavid, Macklin Celebrini, and, of course, Nathan MacKinnon.
The Thompson goal, the second goal of the game, incredible shot. I don't know how we found the space to get that in. So we both played the position. I want your thoughts on this. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, and I think if someone's going to give up a softie, it's Binnington. But who has the goaltending edge, in your opinion?
As much as I love Connor Hellebuyck as a human being and a regular season superstar, he hasn't been tested, really, as much as Binnington. And I put my money on Jordan Binnington. The guy wins big games. The guy knows how to play at his best in the big stage. Yes, you can make a case he's given up not a softie, but, you know, in one of the goals today, and also one of the goals against Czechia. With all due respect, by the way, you know, but when you need the guy as in Binnington to make a tough save, What does he do? He stops breakaways or, you know, all this kind of thing. That's what he did. If it wasn't for Binnington, Canada wouldn't have been in, even in the semifinals, because he made some really big stops at the right time. It's going to be close. I'm American. I'm a New York girl. I'm rooting for Connor Hellebuyck because I'd love to see him win a big game. And on his resume, even though he'll be in the Hall of Fame with his Hart Trophy and Vezina trophies and regular season excellence, the guy is not known on that resume to be good in the playoffs, right? So he's always had bad playoff games. This is his chance to really kind of, I don't know, really improve that legacy that he has. But if I was to bet, and I know Show talks about betting, I put my money on Binnington.
Would, yeah, because, okay, if you like him, and you were talking about how at this point you like the depth of Team USA compared to Canada and how they have played so far in the playoffs, the Binnington edge over Hellebuyck would probably be enough to put you on Team Canada then.
Yes, because going into this, I thought Team Canada was definitely going to win gold. Now, it's a lot closer than I thought it was going to be now. The way U.S. has developed, coaching staff has made adjustments, things like this. Hellebuyck not letting up any easy goals. He's just been solid. It's Connor Hellebuyck being Connor Hellebuyck. Mm-hmm. He's stopping all of the easy ones. But I believe he hasn't been tested. The U.S. is doing a great job defensively. And oh, by the way, I do love the Americans' defensemen. I love the Zach Werenskis of the world. They're just, all of them are solid defensemen. Where in Canada, you have the Cale Makars. You know, obviously Americans have Quinn Hughes and all that, which is amazing. But you have Cale Makar. You have more of an offensive type defenseman with Canada. Shea Theodore scored a goal for Canada. Big one, the tying goal. Tying gold today. So I think you're right about low scoring. But I think the guys like Brad Marchand are going to, and Tom Wilson, guess what they're going to do? They are going to be bothering and trying to get into the head of Connor Hellebuyck from the jump.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know, a lot of people, this is a polarizing topic, it seems, but how they decided the gold medal in the women's between USA and Canada, how do you feel about 3-on-3 overtime?
Here's what I'll say. I know I saw all the tweets. I saw everybody, you know, and some people never watch hockey say, what's this 3-on-3? You know, and there were some people like, wow, this is exciting. I'm like, don't you watch regular season hockey? Obviously not. Yes, 3-on-3, we love. Most of the complaints are from people who say, yeah, we like 3-on-3, but not for a gold medal game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll give you that a little bit, but here's the deal. I have no problem with it. You know what I say to those people? That it's not fair that a gold medal is decided in 3-on-3. Guess what? How about winning it in regulation? You solved that problem. You didn't win it in regulation. You take your chances on 3-on-3. I had no problem with it. And I would say the same thing if Canada won yesterday for the women. I have no problem with it. It's part of the game. Figure out how to play it and defend it and take advantage of it. But I always say, and I've said this with the NFL too. If you have a before they changed the overtime rules in the NFL, you have a problem, win in regulation. I don't want to hear the complaints.
Fair enough. In about a minute here, what do you make of the start time for the gold medal game? 8:10 a.m. Eastern time on Sunday.
I know most of the world couldn't care less, but here in the States, it's essential that this game should be starting much later than on the West Coast, 5 a.m. in the morning. I'll get up, but I'm a hockey nut. Most of the country, at least on the West Coast, is not getting up. The Midwest is barely getting up. The East Coast is barely getting up. It's Sunday. You guys said it best in the break. They could have owned Sunday. Just like the Four Nations gave the NHL a huge boost.
Yes.
Because it was on a normal hour and the ratings were great. Guess what? This is on so early. This could have broken major ratings for a hockey game of any sort. But now, because of the start time, I don't think so.
Linda, absolute pleasure. You're the best. Enjoy the game on Sunday. Thank you so much for the time.
You too. Thanks for having me. Anytime, guys. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Linda Cohn, SiriusXM NHL Network Radio as well, as long as, SportsCenter anchor for 30-plus years on top of it. Eddie Olczyk's thoughts. Does he agree with the goalie situation next?
is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Good to have you on board. We go from Linda Cohn here on a Friday.
Yes.
Into the great Eddie Olczyk, who's been on the games on NBC and Peacock the entire time over in Italy. It is still early, I think, where he is at. Or am I wrong with that, Eddie? Thanks for the time, pal.
Buongiorno. It is, let me think here, 12:40 local time, which is already Saturday morning. And you know what? If I can say this, tomorrow morning, there's going to be a gold medal matchup between Team USA and Team Canada in the men's Olympic competition here at the Olympics in Milan. So yeah. Great to be with you guys. It's been a long trip. It's been a lot of great hockey, and we're going to be able to see the matchup I think most people thought would happen, but it probably got a little scary for a couple of teams here in this tournament to see the eventual matchup between the Canadians and Americans. So thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I can't tell you how much we appreciate the time here. So we just talked to Linda. She gave the edge to Binnington and Nett over Hellebuyck. I think every person I've either heard or talked to has said the same thing. Where are you at with that?
I mean, I can't argue that, but I think if you look at the way that Connor Hellebuyck has played better and better in this tournament for Team USA, I would honestly say it's a coin flip. And I will say this is I was thinking about this during the game, and you know, it's not the time and place, you know, in doing the game or whatever. And I thought I might get to it, but I just kind of kept it under, but I guess I'll say it now. I feel with watching Canada and watching the Americans so far in this tournament, I feel like Sunday's gold medal game's got a chance to be 5-3.
Oh,
6-5.
Holy smokes.
I just have this feeling with holes on either side when it comes to the offensive push from the other teams. You're going to get your chances. And I think when you give up chances in the offense that both of these teams possess, now how's the game going to be called? Is it going to be
good call?
Three power plays for Team USA and two for Canada or vice versa, whatever it is. But I don't know. I just have a feeling that it's got a chance to be a higher scoring game in that gold medal game. So we'll see how it all plays out. But I think it's got a chance to be one hell of a game. And what goaltender could make the save when you need it, more so than maybe when a guy gives up one that's soft or shouldn't go in, and then are you able to overcome it, if that makes any sense. So one game showdown, the puck can bounce a lot of different ways, but I would say it's more of a coin flip than giving the edge to Binnington, because I think Connor Hellebuck's really, as I said the other night, closing off on the win over Sweden. That was one Hellebuyck of a game between the U.S. and Sweden, and Connor Hellebuyck was right in the middle of everything good for Team USA.
What do you think happens with Crosby?
Well, my teammate Brian Boucher said on the broadcast is that he had a feeling that Sid would play. I'm not sure. The speculation is that he did skate today, which would have been a great thing, but obviously not good enough to play. For him to go out in that game the other night against Czechia, I mean, the guy had to be banged up. I mean, I was lucky enough to be his first coach in the National Hockey League back in 2005-06 with the Pittsburgh Penguins. The guy has been all world his entire career, and for him to go out of an Olympic game, I mean, he must have been banged up. So to what extent, no idea, but if he can play a little, it might be a huge lift for the Canadians. But I would just be guessing, Pauly. I really wouldn't want to say, but we'll see how it all plays out in about 40 some hours from now.
Give us some keys. How can they make it easy on Hellebuyck, or easier, and stay out of the box? We know that with the potent Canada power play. What are some keys that you see for U.S.?
Well, they've done a good job of staying out of the box, Pauly. Like, I think they're the second again, don't quote me, please, because all these games are mixing and matching, you know. I think they're the second fewest penalized team in the tournament, which has been a good thing, and that was a point of contention for sure. Power play, absolutely. But, you know, the U.S. has got a pretty good power play, mm-hmm. too. Now, the U.S. locked Tage Thompson tonight in that game. He didn't play in the third period for precautionary measures. Did not see Mike Sullivan's post game about, you know, this, you know, the severity of why they kept him out. But I agree with you. But I also think is that you got two guys in that game on the back end, one for each team, in Cale Makar, the terrific defenseman, and I think the best defenseman in the NHL for the Colorado Avalanche, playing for Team Canada, and Quinn Hughes. I had somebody ask me the other day, guys, about Quinn Hughes, who now plays for the Minnesota Wild. They asked me, do you think Quinn Hughes is a top 15 player in the league? And I was like, hell yes. He might be top 10 the way that he is able to really control the game. So I look at one of those guys is really being a factor in this game, and especially when it comes to facilitating the offense, because they have that ability. So discipline's going to be obviously an important part, especially teams. If you get three power plays, can you get one?
Yep.
Because I think if both teams do get three power plays each, I do believe is that both teams will score at least on one power play. I do. And the U.S. penalty kill is absolutely perfect.
Yep.
And the reasons why Vinny Trocheck and JT Miller of the New York Rangers, who a lot of people felt should not be on a team, one of the big reasons why they made it is because they're versatile and they can kill penalties. And right now, Team USA is absolutely perfect in the penalty kill. So I would look to those specific areas of being real big keys on Sunday morning.
Okay, so when Canada defeated U.S. in Vancouver in 2010, that game went to overtime. Yep. Sidney Crosby scored the game winner. If this game goes to overtime and we get the 3-on-3, who has the edge then?
Well, don't forget, in 2010, it was 4-on-4 at that time. They played 4-on-4.
It was different then, yep.
So exactly. So now, you know, look, I think you have to give the edge to the Canadians just because of the McDavid, MacKinnon, Makar trio. But I will say is that when you can put out Quint Hughes, Jack Eichel, Austin Matthews, you're not that far off, to be honest with you. And it becomes a puck possession game in overtime. If you win the opening faceoff, it's almost like the old football rule, right? A couple of years ago there when the Chiefs got the ball and nobody could get it back because they scored. It's almost like that in hockey now. It's almost like, how many times have you seen it? I think I've seen it at least 3 or 4 times this year in the NHL where a team wins the opening faceoff in overtime, the other team never touches it, and they end up losing. It's almost very similar to that analogy. But I just think that on both of these teams, I do believe in overtime, it does become a coin flip as well. And if it gets to overtime, I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm an alum of Team USA. I played in the Olympics in 84 for Team USA. I played on a bunch of world championships. I'm proud to be an American kid from Chicago that played in the NHL for 16 years. And I'm honored to call the games on NBC. I try to stay down the middle and call it the way it is, but I'm just telling everybody right now, I'm going to be bleeding red, white, and blue. I'm going to be sweating red, white, and blue on Sunday. And I'll say this, and I'm going to touch on this on Sunday. For an American-born hockey player, at least for the men's side, our greatest rival has always been the Canadians. We've had a tough time beating the Canadians, so they have not looked at us as their greatest rival. They look at us as maybe, you know, I don't want to say a cut below, but certainly we've closed the gap. And rightfully so. Like, if there's a rivalry or, you know, the respect factor, the other country, the other team has to beat you every once in a while. The greatest rival for Canada in hockey and men's has always been the Russians. And I think for Team USA, the opportunity is there to take that next step, because it's been a long time since 1996 when Team USA won the World Cup of Hockey, when it was best on best USA against Canada in a 3-game series. And I know we haven't won a gold medal since 1980, but like, this is an opportunity in half to really take down your greatest rival, regardless of what they think of you. And I think that has a lot of the undertone and the underlying energy of this game on Sunday. And I hope everybody tunes in, because I'm hoping that this is a game that really could showcase what, as you guys know, and, you know, Paulie, I know you were a hockey kid growing up. Like, it's a great game. And I think if we can have a great game on Sunday, it's going to be great for everybody.
I got goosebumps. That's how good it was right there, listening to you talk. Amazing job calling the games. Have another terrific call on Sunday, and maybe tip back a glass of vino here for a nightcap. Eddie O, thank you.
See you, boys. Thanks for having me.
Be good.
Thanks, Eddie.
Primetime's next.